Ms. Atkins, reel 3. What would you say were the biggest problems that you had in your own work, personally, at SOE?
Just coping with it, I suppose.
Coping with the volume of work.
Mm. I also kept up a certain amount of correspondence with next of kin. I also interviewed if any worried people, I mean, if you had to say somebody being arrested or whatever, I would try and see them and give them the news. And those interviews were conducted in room 238 of the Victoria Hotel in Northumberland Avenue.
So that must have involved a lot of very painful work for you.
Yes, it was a great drain on one strain, but I think on the whole appreciated, because certainly relations were always very good and remained good with people of all ages and descriptions, parents or wives or children. And yes, one could say that if I wanted to divide up, you know, my work, let's say, I had four secretaries working for me, one mainly on the BBC messages and the intelligence thing, you know, the titbits, comic cuts, etc. One would be perhaps mainly the finance and perhaps can't now remember, but she would also do the briefs, and correspondence with relatives, which became quite a big section of work at one time. And what else were the main sections? To some extent, I suppose, records. And yes, one would extract from the incoming telegrams anything which referred to their movements or requirements, and that would be passed on to the record sections. But we kept records to an absolute minimum and only for direct operational purposes, and not for, with any regard to future historians or to post-war inquiries. It was never in anyone's mind that there would be authors and similarly interested people or post-war histories. That was never in anyone's mind. And this is where one is accused of not having kept proper records for these purposes. But seeing that every scrap was under lock and key or destroyed before being disposed of, One did not leave one's office without locking every bit of scrap of paper concerning people in the field into a steel cabinet. No office was left unattended. You'd lock the door, you'd close the window. The idea that one would be asked to give information subsequently never entered anybody's head.
Did you ever have any security scares?
No, not that I know of. No. But certainly one was very much aware of security. And one is very much aware of not giving any idea of what one was doing or what the office was about. And I think I must have been fairly security-minded because my mother, I was living with my mother at the time, and of course, being out all night and coming back at all hours in the morning and so on, and she saw me getting more and more tired and frustrated, said to me one morning, just to show that she was thoroughly fed up with the type of life I was leading, I said, "Well, I hope one day he'll make an honest woman of you." I thought that was pretty good for security.
Did you find that people asked questions and probed?
No. I had no time for social life anyway.
Was there never any socializing amongst the personnel of SOE?
No, none at all.
Where were you living yourself?
In Nelgwyn House.
Where's that?
Sloane Avenue.
So you weren't too far away?
Right.
I asked you about security, but was there ever any fear or suspicion that SOE might have been penetrated by the enemy?
Not that I know of.
Did any of the agents or people who were recruited cause you any worries over security ever?
Depends what you call security. Security in the field. Yes, there were people who probably were taking unnecessary risks. But this is something which you couldn't control.
Can you remember any specific incidents that stick out in your mind?
No, I don't think I can.
You were talking about the work with relatives, how important that was. Did you ever come across relatives who attempted to blame SOE for any kind of failure to do what they should have done?
No. This was, you know, mischief made by various authors subsequently who felt that, you know, one hadn't done this or one hadn't done that. These are things which one, thank goodness, is able to disregard, knowing that one's conscience is more than clear.
I asked you about earlier on about the specific particular problems that you had in your work. What were the particular satisfactions which you had from it, the greatest satisfactions?
Well, one of the nicest things was always to see returning agents. And, you know, if, as I did on quite a number of occasions see people off who were leaving by Lysander. In other words, were being landed, and the planes that landed people would very often bring agents back from the field. And this was extremely agreeable, because seeing them off was always a strain, a considerable strain. And, you know, some 3 hours later, you'd be on the tarmac welcoming back people who had returned. So you turned yourself inside out and, you know, welcomed them back and seeing them back. And of course, the other thing which was very wonderful was to see people returning from concentration camps. You know, after the 8th of May, people started streaming back from concentration camps, and that was very exciting and marvelous to see them back. And then you would get their stories, and it's from them that one heard what had happened to those who had not returned. It gave you a lead to what had happened.
When you got this kind of feedback from returning agents, did it change very much the picture which you had had in London of what was happening? Were there a lot of surprises?
Well, when a person was arrested, you did not know what had happened to them subsequently. You were not in touch with them any longer. You did not know where they were sent or what had happened, whether they were alive or whether they were dead. And therefore, the returning agents, with the information which they brought, was more than interesting and more than harrowing. It's very difficult to explain these things to people who are not connected, and it's very difficult to recreate the atmosphere of these days. But certainly seeing people back when you had given up hope of them was a very exciting moment.
You've talked about the tension of seeing agents off. Were agents usually calm at that time, or very nervous, or what?
No, they were calm, of course. But I think that, you know, the burden of stress probably was on the person who was seeing them off.
Because of the need to check everything?
The need to check and the realization that they were going out on a very dangerous mission, and this was quite possibly the last glimpse they had of the lovely countryside through which you were travelling with them, and you remained quite safely at this end, safe as bombs would let you be. But obviously there was a considerable strain on one at that time. I always felt it very much.
Did this pressure and strain which you've talked about have any bad effect on your own health?
No, I think I must have been extraordinarily tough. I was certainly very exhausted. By it. And then followed this up by getting myself attached to war crimes. I went out to war crimes in January 46. In order to trace what had happened to people whom one didn't know, whose fate one didn't know, or the details of what happened to one, happened to them.
Did you go to Nuremberg?
Only as a spectator twice.
Where else did you go to apart from Nuremberg?
Well, I was based with the legal section of war crimes, which was in Bad Oeynhausen, head of the British Army on the Rhine. And I worked from there.
What exactly did your work entail?
I was only interested in tracing the people who had gone to concentration camps and who had not returned, and find out how and where they were killed. And I assisted the prosecution in 3 war crimes trials.
Can you remember which they were?
Oh, yes, I can remember which they were. Natzweiler. Which concerned 4 of our girls. Ravensbrück. And the other case was not directly related to anything that I was doing, but where I paid back the assistance which I had from the war crime section. That was the case in Hamburg of trial of the men concerned with fabricating the gas which was used throughout Germany for the killing of humans. But all these are subjects unto themselves, which really are too long to go into, even on a long interview of this kind.
We won't go into the details of those, but speaking in general terms, were you satisfied with the outcome of those trials?
Yes.
You'd gone there to do that tracing and to clear up what had happened to people, but were there any loose ends left where you'd been unable to find out the necessary information?
Well, it was very difficult to trace people who were moved from camps in the Russian zone, and where the trials took place within the Russian zone. I suppose there are about 4 untraced, finally, which is a pretty good record.
You talked about the returning agents and the pleasure you got from seeing them again, but what was the attitude of the returning agents?
Well, huge relief. And of course they came back in varying degrees of ill health. But it was a very wonderful thing to be able to take them back and to their families or wherever.
As far as you were personally concerned, what were you involved in helping the returning agents, apart from taking them back to their families?
Well, I was in, first of all, one would put them up somewhere for the first, some, of course, didn't have families here. It's very difficult to generalize on this. Of course, each case was different. Each case was different.
Did you have to make any arrangements for medical treatment for them?
No, they were seen by medical people. They were all passed through medical examinations. We had our own medical staff. But some had to go into a hospital. If you take a case of Pierre Duchesne, whose lungs were affected, and he was sent to, he was at Pembrey Hospital. Yvonne Burney, Yvonne Bayston, as she was, also TB, and she was at the hospital in Midhurst. I used to visit people at the hospital. I'm getting rather exhausted, to tell you the truth.
Now, can you tell me something about your period in France when you returned there and the problems you had to face in the work that you did?
Well, Colonel Buckmaster had the very good inspiration of going over to France very shortly after the capitulation of Paris, in order to see on the ground some of the sabotage work and to meet the people who had worked with us on the reception of material goods and been active in the resistance.
This was the Judex mission.
That was the Judex mission. And he did this on each of the circuits, accompanied by the organizer in charge. And we visited also the cemeteries and met the widows and made speeches and had reviews of troops, etc. In fact, we were in Lyon on the 11th of November 1944 when there was a major review of lasting about 2 hours of people filing past who had worked in the resistance and the FFI and so forth. We took the salute from the steps of the local mairie. I, on the other hand, arrived in Paris at the end of September 44, when telegrams had been sent out to agents to report to the Hotel Cecil, which was a little hotel with an office manned by two administrative officers who in fact did not know any of the agents or the back history of our work in France. And therefore when I arrived, I was met with a situation which called for urgent action. And I managed to set up a little office there, which was later taken over and run by Major Hazeldine. And this, together with the rest of us, was wound up at the end of 1945, leaving, I'm afraid, many loose ends. And I think that it is, in many ways, most regrettable that the decision was taken by Parliament and those responsible to close SOE before any real assessment could be made of its work or an ordered handover of what remained of historical interest, or indeed any conclusions drawn from this work. And I think that we wasted a great deal of goodwill created by SOE in various occupied territories, ranging from Norway right round the coast of Europe to Greece, where post-war the people heading the governments were in each and every case people who had cooperated with SOE in wartime. And I think this is a great wastage of goodwill.
I think there's one general point you wanted to make about the importance in the question of written works that have been made about SOE since the war, about interviewing and seeing people who actually took part in view of the lack of written records.
Well, I think it's a very great pity that SOE in France was published before the author was enabled to see the people whom we would have wished to see, which included head office staff like Colonel Buckmaster and myself and a number of others, and a much wider cross-section of agents. It is very discernible in the book. I can pick out those whom he had seen as against those whom he had not seen. And it does leave an imbalance there. And his strictures on the lack of records, I think, is another matter which should be put in the proper light, because we were not keeping records for history. We were keeping as few records as possible, and only for our own reference on day-to-day work, with no regard for posterity at all.
I think we should say that restrictions were... placed by the Foreign Office on the author on who could be interviewed.
Yes, he was very much restricted in that respect. And I think that he would be the first to say that if he were able to write the book today, it would be a different historical record.